You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 196 of the Healthy Critters Radio on the Horse Radio Network. Healthy Critters Radio is brought to you by BioStar US. Find them online at biostarus.com.
On today's show, your horse is pooping what it tells you. Critter of the show is how to candle chicks. Critter Nutrition focuses on healing connective tissues. Join us. I'm Tigger.
And I'm Patty.
And I'm Coach Jen. Welcome to the fray, everybody. Woo!
Insert Patty. Barnyard noises.
Insert barnyard noises. Patty, Tigger, and I get together once or twice a month, depending upon the time of year. We chat about all things healthy and all things critter. And candling chicks. I'm not going to, no spoilers, but it's probably not what you think it is. Just to put that out there, no chicks were harmed.
Yep, that's right.
Handling the chicks. And typically, this part of the show, I ask Tigger and Patty some probing question because they've come to the show without being fully
empty-handed.
Prepared. Empty-handed.
Yeah.
But this time, it's different.
Yep. You're welcome.
Tell us why it's different, Patty.
Because I was the one that came up with an idea. And to be, pretty honest, you probably would have come up with the idea. I just said it before you did, but I'm taking credit.
Go for it.
Yep. Gotta do it. So we wanted to ask you all about CODA, Challenge of the Americas, that you just won again.
3 years in a row.
So I was there this year. So tell us about it.
We did something very different this year. Of course we had the quadrilles. But we did a pas de deux dance off.
Cool!
That's now for people who are not dressage-y, what is a pas de deux?
It's two horses.
All right, and a quadrille is.
Well, our quadrilles are six.
Six horse. So you have the six horse, and how many different teams of six?
Five.
Five teams and pas de deux. How many pairs?
We had three.
Three pairs.
Three pairs.
Oh, cool.
And the way it worked was they got 1 minute of trot music. The theme was disco. So they got 1 minute of trot music, 2 minutes of canter music, and then they got a minute. The last minute, they didn't know what the music was, that they had to just interpret.
Oh, fun. Oh,
now, wait a minute. Let me see if I understand this right. So for the pas de deux, did they know what the music was? Had they heard it before?
The trot music they heard. The entrance music they got ahead of time. The trot music they got ahead of time. The canter music they got ahead of time.
But the final minute they
did. But the final minute they did not.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
That is fun.
Now, how was that scored?
They were scored as a pair. They were scored technically and they were scored artistically. And the pair that won was Sven and Adam.
Again, for folks who aren't dressage, Sven and Adam who?
I can't pronounce their last names.
We apologize, Sven and Adam.
Yeah.
You can send your hate mail to Tigger at horseradionetwork.com.
Smink. They're the whistleblowers of the dressage community. And they did something that was so amazing. Before the last minute music came on, they switched horses in the ring.
Neat!
Yeah.
Oh, how fun.
It was really neat.
Oh, how fun. Anybody who's willing to dismount and remount their horse in public in front of it, because this is a crowd of thousands of people watching this whole thing. Yeah. Because, you know, dismounting and mounting, at least for me, even in my younger years, was never something that the world should have to see.
They did it without a mounting block.
I know, because, dressage horses are 22 and a half hands on average.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
How fun is that? So you had a really good crowd to watch, yes?
We had a really good crowd. The tent was overflowing. The stands were full. So, yeah, great turnout. And that pas de deux dance-off, I think we're going to do again next year, but I want to do rock music.
So each year you do the quadrille.
Yeah.
And then each year there's always some kind of an extra add-on, because last year they did the, I remember they had the minis and they were running around with the minis.
Yeah, we
jumps.
Had the minis this year with the jumping horses.
With the jumping horses. So every year it's something new and different.
Yeah.
And the Challenge of the Americas is a fundraising event for
breast cancer research.
Breast cancer research. And it's held every year close to the end of the Wellington season. So it's
always in the beginning of March.
Right at the beginning of the March. And for someone who wants to just go and watch for hoots and giggles, how much does a ticket cost?
$30.
$30 ticket. And it's, what, 3 or 4 hours long? It's quite a
production.
It's a production. And it's all set to music. It's all very, very creative. Lots of bling and glitter and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Something that you know, riders in costume. It's a very different scene.
Yes. It's a big fun party. So
yes,
if you've ever wondered about maybe going down to Wellington to watch a bit of dressage, CODA is something that should be on the list.
Because it is a hoot. If you want to watch this year, just go to Global Dressage, and there is a live stream where you can actually watch it on demand.
Yes, and I have to do that. I haven't had a chance since we got back from our little road trip to sit down and watch it, but I can't wait to. I'm really excited to watch the pas de deux now.
And the Eblings were the second place pair.
Oh my gosh! And what was the theme for the quadrilles this year?
Oh, they were all different. The one quadrille was the Doors.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One was the saluting the Paris Olympics. One was Barbie. One was Neil Diamond.
Cool.
And mine, of course, coming from left field, was time past, time present, and time future.
Ooh, don't tell me anymore. I want to be surprised.
All right.
Okay. Now, do you think ever in his life, Jim Morrison thought to himself, you know, someday they're going to use my music?
Not in a trillion years.
What was he thinking? What was he looking down there thinking?
I mean, maybe he thought, well, you know, I wrote this Riders on the Storm. Maybe some dressage riders will go, hey, that would be great to ride to.
There you go. Yeah. And, you know, Riders on the Storm, that fits a lot of the warm-ups I've seen at dressage shows. Appropriate. There we go. Oh, my gosh. That's a hoot. That's so much fun. I'm glad you guys had a great turnout.
Yeah, we did.
We did.
Raised a lot of money.
Yay. Well,
yes.
We do our little chit-chat, and then we end up with our round table. And, we're going to flip from potty doos. Well, potty do to poop
to potties.
Yeah. Next is poop you do.
Woohoo! Horse people and dog people, we probably are more obsessed about poop than any other beings on the planet. And I brought this topic up because I was doing a consult and the owner is explaining about how the horse is and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, what's the poop look like? And she described it. And I said, what does it smell like? And the phone went dead. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, I'll go and check. I love horse people. She came back. She said, it stinks. I said, okay, that tells us a lot. So I bring this up because not only is the shape, the dryness or wetness important, but it's also the smell.
That's interesting. And that is true. Whenever and you people have probably noticed it when you're loading your horse, invariably the horse, they always poop. They either the second they get in the horse trailer or right before they get on the horse trailer, all over the ramp, invariably horse trailer poop stinks more than regular poop.
Yep.
Why is that?
It's stress. But in this horse's case, because it was, this has been a condition that's been going on for some time. He just needed a little, a detox, basically, not like from alcohol, but his system needed a microbiome upgrade.
He needed microbiome 2.0.
Yes, yes, very much so.
He was behind on a couple of security updates.
I was in a barn this winter, and I'm walking down the aisle, and the horse is being led in by the groom. He's just finished work. And, you know, he's putting him in the cross ties, and the horse takes a dump. And I was a good, 15 feet away. It was like being hit with mustard gas.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I went, oh, my God. Yeah, that's when you really have to go, okay, I need to change my feed program or something. Well, that's not normal. It should smell sweet.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know back when I used to work for a pet store chain a long time ago. And I know with cats, if you feed them poor quality cat food kibble,
it will really stink.
It really stinks more. And people would ask about indoor formula cat foods. Well, they tweaked the ingredients list to remove some of those ingredients that made their poo stink really bad.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that's interesting. It never occurred to me that their feed regimen, but it makes perfect sense. You know, what goes in comes out, right? And if they're absorbing the nutrients from it appropriately and all of the little bugs in their gut are pulling those nutrients out, what comes out should be pretty benign.
Yep.
But if those things aren't happening.
Yeah. And it's the same with dogs. You know, back when I used to go to the dog park, not only was the sight of poop that somebody didn't pick up kind of revolting, but you could see a dog that had been on a lot of kibble just by the amount of poop and the smell.
Your horse has a lot of fiber in their manure that still looks like hay. Do we look first to the hay, or is that
no? Because how they're digesting there is insoluble fiber in hay. It's called lignin, and it's the same thing that makes a tree strong, but it's not digestible.
Mm-hmm.
It's not usable fiber, but it's going to go through the horse's digestive system and it's going to end up in the poop. So I would not worry about that at all.
Interesting.
When you look at a bale of hay and you have some of those stems are really thick.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of lignin.
Mm.
If you're dealing with a horse with hindgut ulcers, at least for 30 days or more, you want to reduce the amount of lignin that the hindgut has to deal with. Because again, it's insoluble.
So
that's why I put horses on chopped hay that have hindgut ulcers for.
Horse feed has lignins in it too.
Uh-huh.
So whenever you're feeding a horse that has a sensitive digestive system, he's prone to either stomach ulcers or hindgut ulcers, should you be using a feed that is higher or lower in fiber? Because everybody looks at that number, the protein, fat, and fiber, and the horse feed has fiber X, Y, or Z. And if you read the ingredients, you're going to see where the fiber is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, you see alfalfa in there. You see beet pulp in there.
Soy hulls.
Peanut hulls.
Wheat middlings.
They're all sources of fiber. Are those are not all created equal, are they?
No. I mean, there's a lot of different foods that have soluble and insoluble fiber. If as a human, if you take, you know, bran It has got insoluble fiber. That's what moves through your system and ends up in the toilet. You know, that helps, you know, with constipation and stuff. So it's the same with horses.
Okay. So if your horse is eating hay, because he's always getting soluble and insoluble fiber.
Correct.
Should, from your point of view, should their concentrate also contain a lot of fiber? Or because some horse feeds you get have a very low number where the fiber is. It might be 6 or 8 or 10%. Other horse feeds you buy, it says 28%. Where do you think that that should be? Or is it a great deal different for each horse?
Well, it's different for each horse. It certainly depends on how much fiber they get all day long. You know, a horse that's out grazing 10 hours a day and gets hay probably doesn't need more fiber, I mean, significant fiber in the feed, unless you're feeding a ton of it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but a horse who gets 12 pounds of hay a day, which can be consumed in approximately 4 hours. That horse might benefit from having
absolutely
a concentrate that also has extra fiber in it.
Yes.
Got it.
I would say that if the most important thing you can feed is pasture and hay. But if your horse suffers from hindgut ulcers or hindgut acidosis, you might want to go on a softer chopped hay for a while to just give the colon a rest from the stemmier pieces in flaked hay.
Yes, that makes perfect sense because it's this, and you can tell the stem from the leaf. The leaf is all nice and soft and squishy, and the stem is kind of prickly.
Yes.
Yeah. Very interesting stuff. And then this is all reflected in the poop.
Yeah. I mean, I think poop is pretty fascinating. You know, it tells you so much about the animal, where the animal is that day. Dry. And sometimes horses could go from just normal and then, you know, several hours later it's dry and you realize, oh my gosh, I'm dealing with a little dehydration. Or the ones that, you know, have more of a leaky gut syndrome and they're just, manure is leaking all the time. I feel the most sorry for those horses because it burns, you know, their skin and
they get diaper rash.
Yeah, they do. They do. And there's so many different reasons for it. It's you can't really generalize.
Yeah, you have to take a look at each individual case, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What, Patty, what do you find with poop?
Well, it's funny. Just recently, one of my clients who had a horse that had gotten dehydrated and had an impaction, and thank goodness we didn't have to do anything with it. But, you know, since then we've been talking a lot about poop. You know, I go in the stall, like after they poop, I'll go in the stall, I'll like, you know, step on it. I want to see if there's anything different or something doesn't look right. And I also have one, and I've talked to you about this horse many times. I have one horse whose poop, when I say it smells, it's ungodly. but it's always such a source of trying to figure out, okay, is this a stressful thing or is this, you know, whatever. And because it certainly, or does this diet need to be tweaked or is it the hay or is, you know.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a window to their innards in a way. And of course with dogs, the same exact thing. It's
just such a good barometer for the health of the organism. How about you, Jennifer? He thought you'd get away and not have to say anything.
You know, I'm always fascinated by the fact that different horses have different sized poots. Some horses seem to save it up for a long time.
That's so true.
And other horses is like, oh, you know, there's 62 little piles in their stall or their paddock. And then there are other horses. Nope. There are 7 piles and they're each one giant.
Yeah.
And I guess that's just a function of how their system goes.
I'm not sure the amount is as significant as the quality, because I've known big horses that, you know, were kind of average in their poops, and smaller ones that, you know, they could build a manure wall. And it's healthy looking. It doesn't smell. It's not dehydrated. So I'm not sure the amount is significant, unless it's just, you know, a few little droppings and you know, 12 hours and you go, oh, I've got a problem.
Well, there we go. All about poop. So there you go.
Everything you wanted to know.
And more.
Yeah, everything.
So if you have poop questions.
Oh, gosh.
You can drop an email to Tigger.
Here to answer all your poop questions.
There, you can just head on over to biostarus.com and right there's a contact and drop her a line.
Thanks, Jennifer.
You're welcome. And speaking of poop.
Otis.
Hi.
The only talking podcast Dutch warmblood, correct?
I think so.
Okay. To remind our listeners, Otis is a 4-year-old Dutch warmblood who talks.
So, a lot.
So, Otis, I wanted to hear a little bit about your journey with fungus, because being in Florida is kind of being in the fungus capital of the world.
You know, it's interesting. Last year, when I was only 3, I infected the whole barn with fungus. I recovered very quickly and was fine. No problem. Very, very fast. Really just a few days of treatment. And I was back to work. I did not even lose very much of my suit. But one of my friends, Hobbit, he had to go on a lot of drugs and was sick for months. So I think what's interesting here is that obviously I have had a lot of fungus in my life. And so I have developed the ability to recover from it very quickly and not be struck low. And then this year, you know, it's been rainy and so I was really kind of rocking it, doing great. And then I started growing like a giraffe. And I probably knocked my own immune system a little bit out with my amazing growth spurt. And then I got that same fungus again in my elbow. This time it was a little worse for me because I still don't have hair. But the good news is I can't really be bothered by it. It's not even really itchy anymore. And it gave me time to finish my growing.
So what did the lady do to treat your fungus?
Well, first she asked why I was so gross.
Meaning dirty?
Well, I am stinky a lot of the time because I like to sleep everywhere. Flat out in the sand, in my stall, wherever, really. I would probably sleep in the ring if I could. She's kind of boring. So that's true. I mean, I totally would do that. And then, so she said, why am I always so sticky and grungy when I have so many baths? And I said, maybe she should stop giving me baths and I would stop being grungy. But she said, no. So then she dragged me back out to the hideous wash stall. And she attacked my fungus with about 700 different products and left them on and then washed them off. And then she put on a new one and then she left that on and washed it off. And then she sprayed me with a spray, which I did not like at all. And then she sprayed me with another spray. And she repeated this pretty much every day until it was no longer gross. And now it's just the hair has to grow back. There's nothing she can do, though she probably would if she could. She's incorrigible. That's a new word I learned.
Oh, that's a big word.
Yeah, it gets used about me, which I think is weird.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing incorrigible about you, is there, Otis?
I don't think so. Incredible, yes. Incorrigible? No.
Well, thank you, Otis, for telling us about your fungus adventure.
You're welcome. I mean, I didn't have big scaly fungus like some of the others. Mine was just hairlessness. Well, crusty, disgusting hairlessness.
All right. Well, thanks, Otis.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye, Otis.
Bye.
So last show, I was talking about incubating chickens. It's come to my attention. I recently had a birthday and a very big birthday party, and everybody, there was a chicken cake. So apparently I'm obsessed with my chickens. Cool cake. I got it. Really quite cool. But anyway, I have my, the chickens that I had incubated last time we had was kind of been a little bit of a hit or miss. So we are currently doing our second set. So this is kind of part two, and it has been much more successful. But part of the reason I think it's been successful this time is we did something called egg candling. And, it's basically for incubating eggs, and basically anybody can do it. You can do it in your own home. You can do it with, you can buy an egg candler, or you can get a flashlight. And if you Google, you can see how to do it, but you're just basically holding a light of some sort in a dark room underneath an egg. So, I kind of was going to just talk a little bit about this. And then I went down this rabbit hole, cause there's a really kind of a lot to learn about this that I thought fascinating. I mean, who knew? Did you know about egg handling, Tigger?
I did, but I've never done it.
Okay. How about you, Jennifer? Did you know that you could candle an egg?
I knew that because Glenn's dad used to do that for a living.
Oh, wow.
Yes. He was an egg guy for the, USDA. Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. Cool. Well,
who knew?
Of course. So I'm new at this and learning. So just add anything if you know. So one of the important things in the first part of egg candling, is you early on can identify if a fertilized, the egg has been fertilized. So when you go along the incubation process, you know, like this time we had 12 eggs, five of them for sure aren't good. And I was like, okay, well, how do we know all this? So, so what I've been reading is that a lot of people like to do it earlier on to see before they even incubate the eggs or put them in the incubator, because they want to see if it's a viable egg. So if it like has a crack or whatever, you know, that can actually, bacteria can seep to the egg, and then obviously you would not have a viable chick. So you don't want to go through all that. One place that I was reading about, they do it twice. They do it at the 7th day and the 14th day. And at this point we are day 22 in the hatching of my eggs. I've had three so far. So we're still kind of waiting. So you don't want to disrupt the eggs the first couple of days of you incubating, because you're getting them set up right. You don't want to mess with the humidity and all of that good stuff. So you want them to obviously stay viable. So about the 7th day around there, you can actually see like spider veins, which indicate the egg has been fertilized. At this point, you can rotate it a little bit to see, like you can't really see where the little chick is. It's kind of cool, because if you look this up on the internet, it's fascinating how many egg chicken egg pictures there are. At this point too, you can sort of see around 7th and 8th day if an embryo has died, and you want to definitely take them out, because they can apparently they can explode in the incubator, which is, you know, I'm sure would not be fun. Also, at this point, you can see if you have any clear eggs, they won't develop, because that means that they haven't been fertilized. And then I guess apparently you can see the yolk, because it will actually like float up to the top. So I think that's kind of cool. So you just sort of wait around, and then you can go back again at 14 days. And at 14 days, when you look at them, then you can really start to see where the chick is. And that's really kind of cool. What we've done through this process with my eggs is that, you know, we could kind of tell that some weren't good. There was a couple question marks. We just left them in there, which was good. two of them actually ended up hatching. So around the 18th day, you'll start to see if they're going to, you know, come out and be little chicks. But the coolest thing, and I've never seen this, the girl that's doing this for me sent me a video, and she picked up an egg, and the egg is chirping. And Tigger, I will send it to you. It is the coolest thing in the world. So when they do that, you put them back in the incubator, and it can take them up to 24 hours, and you don't want to have to help them because they'll start to peck their way through, and you want them to kind of go through. It's just like, you know, a dog being born or a baby being born. You have to let it kind of go through its process.
Yeah.
And what's kind of been interesting is, you know, I've never done anything like this. I've foaled out many, many mares. I've had puppies before. I've seen kittens. Like, it seems like such a different process because it's a chicken and an egg, no pun intended, but it's so similar to, you know, a cat having a kitten. Like, you have to let it go through its whole process of being birthed and how important it is, because the nutrients it still gets from the egg. So when they break out of the egg and they're still in the incubator, you still leave them be. And they say, and this is the piece that we haven't figured out yet. When ours were about 24 hours old, the first two eggs, because you have to keep waiting, because it can take up about 24 days total for them to hatch, just depending on, it always changes. But the first one came in 24 hours later. The next two came within 12 hours. But we had to take the first one out because within 24 hours, that's when they need to drink and eat. So you kind of have to figure out that balance. And so we think, so this time it has been more successful. So this time we think we have a total of three, possibly four, out of the 12 I gave her. But this was the funniest realization that I have. So I have 15 hens and I have one rooster. And so I just assumed that when I got the eggs, all of them would have been fertilized. Never dawned on me that apparently I don't feed him enough protein. I'm kidding. But it's a lot of hens for one rooster. But it's just been kind of a cool thing to do. But I'm telling you, picking up one of those eggs and listening to it chirp, and then they fall asleep. Like, they don't chirp again.
Aww.
Yeah, they fall asleep and probably have to get up enough energy, and then they peck their way out. And the pecking part, it can take like a 24-hour process for them to get out. And you leave them alone. You don't help them. Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
So, yeah. So that's, it's much more successful this time. We ended up playing with humidity because I talked last time about different humidities for different types of eggs and all. It definitely paid out. And I have some more grand chicks. There you go.
Grand chicks.
Yeah.
Real horses and real dogs are healthier, perform better, and recover more quickly on real food. That's why BioStar empowers horse and canine owners with 100% whole food nutrition, supplements, and feeding programs. BioStar products are made at their own certified non-GMO facility in Gordonsville, Virginia, using real food ingredients that are raw, freeze-dried, or dehydrated, never cooked, and are free from artificial flavors, colors, soy, corn, wheat, and molasses. The BioStar product line includes a wide range of whole food, horse and dog supplements, treats, and unique artisan poultices that embrace the ancient and traditional uses of clay and plants. Visit BioStarUS.com today and learn about whole foods and canine and equine nutrition so you can make the best decisions about the care and health of your horses and dogs. That's BioStarUS.com. Whole food nutrition, the way nature intended.
So we're at Critter Nutrition, and we're going to talk about healing from connective tissue injury, which is subtitled, Now I Know How the Horses Feel. Recently, on a normal morning in the kitchen, I pivoted to get something from the kitchen counter and heard a pop. The pain was so intense, I thought I might vomit. My knee was unbendable. Strangely, though, it was weight-bearing, just peg-leg style. I thanked my lucky stars that I could at least walk without crutches, as I hobbled to the nearest couch encircled by two Aussies saying, "What's wrong with you?" A strained hamstring coupled with a strained lateral ligament was the diagnosis. Recovery time was labeled weeks. Hamstrings are muscles joined with connective tissue tendons. Connective tissue is essentially tissue that supports, protects, and gives structure to other tissues and organs. Tendons and ligaments are fibrous connective tissues. Ligaments attach bone to bone. Tendons attach muscle to bone. I started with ice and stall rest. Unlike a horse, I didn't have to stand to get the ice applied. Gave me a new appreciation of horses standing on an injured limb while being iced. The ice turned out to be problematic when the ice machine in the freezer stopped working. Instacart to the rescue. Ordered ice and comfort food, soup, oranges, and Haagen-Dazs. Stall rest was challenging. By day three, I had seriously contemplated taking a spoonful of Theracom to deal with the anxiety and stress. I opted for some CBD drops I had for the dogs. Common therapy for horses with ligament or tendon strains is shockwave therapy, as it increases circulation, helping the body send more nutrients to the injured area. I didn't have a shockwave machine, so I started gently massaging the area between icings. 2 days after the initial injury, I began alternating a heating pad with the ice. Heat to increase and drive circulation, ice to close the capillaries, heat to open them. I hand walk myself, peg leg style, to let dogs out, feed dogs, get more ice. I tried wrapping the knee, but couldn't take even the slightest pressure. I kept reminding myself that healing connective tissue takes time. One of the keys to help the body heal connective tissue is protein and collagen and vitamin C. This is true for humans and horses. One of the common misconceptions when dealing with horses that have tendon or ligament injury is to reduce the amount of feed they get while stall bound. While reducing feed to keep the horse from either gaining weight or going bonkers is a good plan, make sure you keep protein levels up. The body needs protein to heal. Without adequate protein, the body will cannibalize itself, pulling protein from other parts of the body. Heff, hay pellets, or alfalfa pellets are excellent choices for supplemental protein. Alfalfa pellets do not have as much protein as alfalfa hay. Some horses get a little high from too much protein like alfalfa hay, particularly if they are on stall rest. Alfalfa pellets offer a great alternative to alfalfa hay. L-proline, an amino acid, is especially beneficial to maintain connective tissues. Chia is an excellent source of proline for we vegetarians. Luckily, I had chia on hand. Collagen provides structural support to the extracellular space of connective tissues. It is a matrix for skin, tendons, bones, and ligaments. It is vitally important for regeneration of connective tissue. Because I take collagen every day, I amped up my dose to double the amount I normally take. Twice a day, I eat applesauce or oatmeal with chia and collagen. I snacked on orange sections for vitamin C. To ramp up my protein, I had eggs every day and snacked on cheese. The dogs are thrilled since they got to share in the cheese consumption. I increased the amount of bovine colostrum I was taking to 2 servings a day. Colostrum isn't just for immune regulation, but also important for tissue repair. I drank a lot of water. This became challenging as using the toilet with a knee that doesn't bend is awkward at best and painful at worst. I used a bathroom waste basket to prop my leg on. There were moments I wished I were a horse and could just stand where I was and pee. Other inconveniences: putting on pants, taking off pants, a seemingly mindless procedure unless your knee doesn't bend. Then it's lie down on the bed and pull your pants up or pull them down. Sprinkle swear words liberally. Getting in and out of cars. push the seat back to accommodate the peg leg, but can't push the seat too forward because the knee will bend. Being short, this means that I literally had to drive with the toes of my right foot, with my arms at their full extension to the steering wheel. Let the good times roll. Several times a day, I massage my knee and the surrounding tissues. The lateral ligament was so tight, it felt like a guitar string. The hamstring felt like a tight, angry rope. Massage is a valuable tool for increased circulation. I also worked at bending my knee, moving it slowly, and when meeting resistance, stopped. I would bend it a little, then straighten and relax. I know from having two major knee surgeries not to let my knee get a kind of rigor mortis from lack of movement. The first 48 hours, there was zero improvement in the bending department. But after that, there was improvement, even if it was in micrometers of flexibility. Although I had resigned myself to several weeks of recovery, I woke up on day 6 and I could bend my knee. I couldn't believe it. As if it had never been angry, swollen, painful, and tight as a tick. The lateral ligament and the hamstring were pliable, just like my other leg. And just like a horse who's been pronounced sound by the vet after a suspensory or tendon layup, I knew I had to leg myself back up. Naturally, on day 3 of my leg-up process, I overdid it, suffered the consequences, and was back on ice that night. Lesson learned. Less is more when recovering from injury. I am continuing to tack walk myself with great restraint. I'd love to bust a move when I hear a song that makes me want to dance or move from one place to another with a certain degree of speed and impulsion. I do know now how the horses feel when they are just tack walking but want to jump out of their skin or shy at the imaginary gremlin in the corner. The human body and the equine body have a tremendous capacity for healing. I am so grateful for the reminder.
Coffee clutch time. It's coffee clutch time. I am hijacking coffee clutch today because I didn't get to ask my probing question at the beginning of the show because doggone it, Tigger and Patty were organized.
For once in our lives.
Yes. Because sometimes my probing question is pretty lame, but this time I thought I had a good one.
Ready.
Ready. Today's probing topic is grooming totes. Yes, grooming totes. And you have to have a grooming tote if you have a lot of dogs to groom or a lot of horses to groom. So, Patty, we're going to start with you. What is your preferred? I'm getting poop in the brain again. What is your preferred containment device for grooming tools?
I have a, it's like a grooming bag and it's stiff on this. It's by Lemieux. And I am fanatical about my brushes being in a certain spot. I like to know where they all are. I don't like any of them. Like they don't get thrown back in. They get put back in a specific way every time. And I have like my hoof pick and my tail brush and, you know, anything else that, you know, if I have bit butter, whatever else I have for when I'm tacking up. So that's, I've had that one for several years and that's kind of my favorite one.
So it's like a soft-sided one.
It's soft-sided, but there's like cardboard in it. Does that make sense? It's cloth.
Yes, but it stands up by itself. Yeah.
Yeah, it stands up by itself. Yeah.
Now, is it the one that has the little zip-closed lid?
No, I like it open. I like to see everything.
You like the open kind. Okay.
Yeah.
Tigger, what is your preferred grooming tool containment device?
A little Biostar bucket.
Good brand placement. I like that. Expand on bucket. Big bucket, little bucket, square bucket, round bucket.
It's round, and I put the dog brushes and combs and all that stuff in this, and a shampoo if I need, you know. Mm-hmm. And then that way I've got everything that I need right there in that bucket. And it's small. It's not a feed bucket. It's way smaller than that.
Like a 2 gallon bucket size, maybe?
Smaller than that.
Oh, it's like I would call that a pail.
pail. It's a pail. It's a BioStar pail.
I didn't know there were BioStar pails.
There are.
I didn't either.
How does one get a BioStar pail?
Just call the office and they'll send you one.
Oh my gosh.
I want a BioStar bucket.
I want a BioStar pail. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, Tig or Patty, we're going to flip back over to Patty again. For your everyday grooming at the barn, do you have a grooming stall? Do you groom in the aisleway, or are the horses groomed in their stalls?
So it's a pretty incredible private facility. And so there's three grooming areas, and behind it is like a countertop with like shelves, you know, cabinets and stuff. So where all the grooming, different grooming things are. And that's where my grooming tote is. And when I first got there, the woman who owns the barn had actually, she is the most organized human being I've ever met in my life. And each horse had their own plastic container of the brush, of their brush. Like each horse had one with their name on it with their, all their different brushes. That to me becomes kind of tedious. So we just use my grooming thing.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you, Pat or Tigger? Do you have a special place where you groom the dogs? How many dogs are there currently, by the way?
Seven.
Say it proudly. Own it, Tigger.
Seven!
Yay, there you go. Do you have a special place you groom them, or do you groom them wherever, you know, the mood suits you?
I like the back porch when I'm de-shedding, because it's a concrete floor out there. And I can sit on a step and the dog can sit on a step, and we have the, you know, nice backyard to look at while I, you know, cover myself with hair, like as if I've been, you know, shaving a horse. It's unbelievable in the spring. It's just absolutely unbelievable. But I also let little tufts of hair blow out in the yard for the birds, because they like that for their nests.
I love it when I find a bird's nest that's all lined with horse hair. I think that's so
great.
Cool.
It's so great. I want to know about your grooming tote.
Yeah.
I am a grooming tote. What's the word I want? Butterfly. Pisciando. Butterfly. I change pretty regularly. Right now I have.
Wow.
I have the traditional big plastic rectangular shaped Dura tote.
Yeah.
Everybody has, kind of ubiquitous, because it hangs on the top of the wall between the tack and feed area and the grooming area. It's a half wall, and it's easy to take out of the cabinet and plop on top. But I don't like it because it doesn't fit all of my tools in it.
Aha!
Everything is mashed and thrown in there to make it fit, and I hate that. I like it all kind of neat and organized. So for the perfect world, when there is a grooming area at over 2 acres, for those not in the know, knock on wood, we're in the process of getting things built at the little 5 acre we bought.
The house?
Well, the barn's already there, but the house is still in progress. That's still not ready yet. But the grooming area, I'm going to have two of those grooming things. They hang on the wall. It looks a little bit like a shoe caddy that you hang on the wall, except it's made for brushes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I've seen that.
Yes. Yeah. I have one, but one only fits enough grooming tools for one horse, and we have two. So I'm going to have two of them, because I have a lot of grooming tools. I have at least three different kinds of towels, at least four different currying type devices. Usually three bristly brushes, two main comb brushes in there, in addition to main trimming devices, and then all the bottled goods.
Yes.
There's too much. How do you fit everything you need in one tote, Patty? How?
That's a trick question. The answer is you don't. There's just not possible.
Yeah, it's not possible. Yeah. And I've really leaned into towels of all sorts recently for grooming tools. There's a company called, Epona. You've probably heard of them. They make a lot of really fun stuff. She has all these different, I'm going to call them towels, but they're not, all these different cloth-like things for grooming that have various textures to them. And I have them all, and I love them because you can get all the soft spots and the hard spots and the nooks and the crannies, and they're so easy to wash. You just stick them in a bucket of soapy water, slush them around and rinse them, and they dry in about 45 seconds versus a bristle brush, which you wash and it takes a day and a half to dry. So I'm kind of in love with the grooming cloth right now.
Wow.
Yeah. There we go. So I'm going to have a clothesline too, now that I think about it.
Do you have a grooming stall, a wash stall in your barn?
We are going to have a grooming area. The part of the barn that is designated for horses has room for 3 stalls, but we only have 2 horses. So one of those, I'm going to use my air quotes, stalls will be the grooming area. And then we will have a separate outdoor area for bathing.
Ah.
Yes. Which is really lovely because it's out underneath one of the live oak trees.
Nice.
Because, hello, it's Florida.
Yeah.
And most people put their wash stalls outdoors because you can. But the problem is if you put it outdoors and you're out there washing a horse during the day, you will literally boil.
Yeah.
You need to have shade out there. So we placed ours out underneath one of the great big
live oaks.
Yeah. So it's really quite lovely. I'm very excited about that. We have to put some mats down. We got the fill in. So it's on some fine rock so it can drain. But then we need to put some mats down so it doesn't get mushy muddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll have a separate one of those. Then I'll have to have a separate, I won't be able to keep stuff out there because it's not covered. It's just shady. And I don't want to leave anything out there because it'll get rained on and ruined. But I'll have to have a separate little tote of some sort just for bathing supplies. Oh my gosh, there's so much. There's so much. Well, if you have a favorite grooming tool containment device, we would love to hear about it. And you can reach out to us by going over to biostarus.com and dropping an email to Tigger. You can go
Which
you will forward to me. You can go to Facebook and look up Healthy Critters Radio and post something on the Facebook page. We would love to see that. You can put a picture there too, by the way. Or you can email me, Jennifer, horseradionetwork.com, and I will make sure that Tigger hears about your favorite grooming tool containment device and follow up.
That's so funny.
There we go. Now, we are at the tail end of the Wellington season. You guys will all be heading back to your appointed hometowns shortly. So next month, April, we will be back to two episodes
a month. Our 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 a month.
Mm. 2 a month again. Yay!